Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show,
where we talk about things that matter,
practice the art of coming more alive,
and reflect on just how strange and wonderful life can be.
We're glad you're here. What up, Pod Fam? Sure hope you enjoyed last week's Garage Sessions episode, the first of more to come, where Kate and I return to our roots and create a podcast episode with just the two of us, where we dig into things that we find interesting and inspiring. It was a ton of fun. Hope you enjoyed it. And speaking of inspiring, the guest on this week's show, the one you're about to listen to, is none other than Daneen Akers, author of the children's book, I put that in air quotes, not that you can see it, because really this is a book for all peoples. It's titled Holy Troublemakers and Unconventional Saints. And if you don't know about this book, basically what Daneen did, she came up with like 50 people, mostly living, some of which are less living, 50 folks or so who've contributed to the world in some profound ways, driven by their faith, as a result of their faith. And she specifically focused on individuals who have identity markers that are often overlooked or marginalized, like people of color or women or LGBTQ individuals. And she did these profiles on them, and then she hired artists to like paint or draw or somehow create these gorgeous portraits of each of the profiles that she did. And if you haven't seen it, it really is a stunning product. Now, we got to meet Daneen several years ago when her and her family lived out this way and attended our church, Sojourn Grace, and we love their family, we love Daneen, and it was so much fun to invite her on to talk about this very timely, very important work. So if you haven't yet done so, check out Holy Troublemakers and Unconventional Saints. Just a quick reminder that if the Kate and Colby Show is something that you listen to and or enjoy, like, would you listen to it if you didn't enjoy it? Do people like hate listen podcasts? Do you have the time for that? That doesn't make sense. But if you want to support the show, if you get the resources to support the show, head on over to Buy Me a Coffee. You know, like if you wanted to buy me a coffee, just one word, buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby, KateAndColby. And this is a platform where consumers like you, our pod fam, can directly support this show and help to make it happen. Thank you for all of you who do that. You are the most incredible baristas. We love you. All right, let's get into the show. And like we mentioned at the end of this episode, we're going to be taking the rest of June off from the live show format, but we're still going to crank out some garage sessions. So make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast feed. And then we'll be coming in hot. So hot. In July. So just be ready for that. All right, y'all. Be well, and we'll see you.
Daneen and I.
I realized that. Kate just said, babe, you could just mouth the song instead of singing along because it's really loud in our ear holes. Hi, welcome to the Kate and Colby Show, everybody.
Oh, yes.
We're live.
Hi.
How did you feel about, that song,
my
by the way?
My husband sings constantly.
It's called Back to 95.
And sometimes I have to ask you to not.
It's sometimes.
The other night we were watching the Friends reunion, which...
That was really good.
That was really good. But I was like so excited. I was like so excited for the theme song. Like the theme song for every show. I'm one of those people that loves the intro to a show. True. I don't
I'm
do
like,
the skip,
skip
thing.
Intro.
No, I love show intros.
It's weird that
intros.
We're different on that.
And I love the theme song. So I was so excited to hear the theme song. And then every time they played it, you were just loudly in my ear singing it. I'm like, I just want to hear the...
It's hard for me, but it's hard for you. It's equally hard for both of us.
We're in the car. I want to hear this band sing this song.
Just love singing along. Okay, but that song, anyway, thank you, Shane. Shane likes the song. Ben Grace says, I love the song. I do too.
So Susan, I could come out of the closet all over again if we went back to 1995.
That's fun. So 95 is the year Kate and I met. And so that
Are
song,
you sure?
Yeah, don't do the math.
It's close enough. It's close enough to where I feel like it's accurate. So the song is, can we take it back to 95 before we had this drama in our lives? Just staring at the screen.
Shane is 100% of the time me. It's getting freaky how much Shane and I are just
like I didn't watch the whole show.
100% the same intro person. Yeah. Anyway.
We have a special guest tonight. And it's Deneen Akers.
I'm so excited.
The author / activist of the incredible book, Holy Troublemakers, and
Ampersand.
And Unconventional Saints. And we can't wait to talk to her about it. Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show.
Oh, Ben says, except for the new theme song for Felicity Season 3, which is hilarious that he's saying new because that's a really old show.
That's really funny. Polly, we are with you. Hopefully no crashing tonight.
Last week was so sad.
It was so sad and unexpected. It was an anomaly.
I'm so mad because, I mean, when it's just you and I farting around doing stuff or like things that we do every week. Fine, we do them every week. Oh, well, who cares? Yeah. We'll be back to do it next week. But, like, the guest, like, we had Paula. Yeah. We had Paula.
The PSW.
Frustrating.
And the whole thing just on us. It was sad. But you came back.
That
was
I didn't get the sound right.
I like that you went for it, though.
I tried.
That feels like that's a big step for you to publicly attempt a sound effect. That was really fun.
Publicly fail.
I don't think it was as bad as you think it was. I just realized I didn't change the aperture setting on the camera. So
what does that mean?
It means if I go like this, now I'm fuzzy or now I'm in focus and you're fuzzy. And if we get out of the plane, so we either deal with it and be.
Yes, that.
Or I just go change it really quick. No. Okay. We're going to deal with it. Let's just try to keep our heads
we
in the same
We have to try to get
latitude.
To a point with the Kate and Colby show where Colby isn't fixing things the entire time. He's present.
Oh, I agree.
Talking.
I don't want to fix things the entire time. Hey, let's do a quick viewer check-in. We want to check in with you, viewers. If you've never been with us before for a live Kate and Colby show, this is the part in our show where we ask you a question. Typically, it's on theme for the guest for the evening, and tonight's will be as well. And we just leave your comments in the Facebooks and the YouTubes. And, you know, if it's a good comment, we'll put it up there.
To you.
I don't know if it is.
If it's a good comment, we'll put it up there. Yep.
Cool. What you pointing at, babe? All right, here we go. Bring out the bass.
How about you bring out the bass, I'll bring out the bourbon.
Speaking of theme songs, that always reminds me of Seinfeld. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a question regarding heroes. Who was one of your earliest heroes and why? Can you think back? Can you take it back to 95? Some of you need to go back farther than that.
What's funny about that is I think the people that I idolized, like, that I found heroic back then, like, I don't really want to talk about them. No.
Well, I'm kind of curious.
I mean, just, like, Christian thought leaders. But, they're not my hero now, for sure. Opposite.
But why were they then?
Well, you know why. That's boring.
I mean, is it boring?
I'm sure.
Close. Go away.
That I didn't have good heroes is what I'm trying to say. And I think that's kind of sad. Which is why Deneen is so, why our guest tonight is so awesome. That's, talk about the whole point, actually. We just kind of made the whole point right there. We did not have good heroes growing up, which is why Deneen did this book that we're going to talk about tonight. Who were your heroes?
Who were some of your earliest heroes?
I can't even I definitely can't even think of anyone. I think that this question means I have to decide whether to do mine. I almost said that out loud when Colby asked it, but that is a thing that you came upon way later in your life, Karen.
No heroes speech? Is that like TLC No Scrubs?
No, be a good human and play along. The whole point was, A, that we had heroes way earlier on in our life, and B, you can reimagine what that means, like Deneen's book. Peter Pan was your hero?
I love that.
I could go that route.
Yeah, take it in. Oh, legit, take it in.
See, my brain couldn't. All I could think was like the figureheads in our churches and theological spheres.
I forget the guy's name.
It's like all that would come to my head.
Okay. You share one that came up for you. I'm going to.
Simba.
I love that.
Simba was my hero. Simba was everything. See, these are great. Okay. Karen took us to a good place. Peter Pan. That's perfect. Helen Keller. I was obsessed. That's a good hero. See, that's a great hero. You had good. Oh, I tried to add it and it looped. Sometimes that can be disastrous when you go to add a comment.
Oh, yeah. Helen Keller. Sorry. I know you just. I'm just not tuning into that. Yeah, that's a great one.
Also, Lenny. Hi, Lenny, by the
way. Lenny, welcome back. I feel like it's been a minute.
Batman!
Great early hero. Anne Frank, still my hero.
Bert and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I'm for sure that that was a creepy movie. But I loved it. It was my mom's favorite movie. Oh, Ben is with me. Same as Kate. So outside of the heroes in my youth group, there was Richard Kingsmill, who was the music director. Ooh, cool.
Of JJJ Radio.
That's fun.
That's
cool. He was the master of interview with people that were difficult, like Tori Amos. I don't know what that means, but I'm wanting to be a person who's a master at interviews with difficult people. That's like goals, right?
Ooh, Karen says, and with an E, obvi.
Oh!
She would qualify as an early hero of yours.
Duh.
Karen, thanks for priming her pump a bit. I knew there was more in there.
See, this is what Karen does. First, she's like, I disagree with the question. And then she has all the good ideas for it.
Now you're blurry. That doesn't bother you?
Honey.
Sorry.
You guys, Colby's going to be okay. Colby's going to be okay. I will stay right parallel with you.
I want you to have the freedom and us to have the freedom.
And we do. We have that freedom.
We get blurry.
Bob Hope for giving time and laughter to our military over the course of his life to make someone laugh and feel like they weren't forgotten. That's
beautiful. I love that sort of answer. So one of the things that came up for me, and this is super random. There was a...
Oh, you might have already put that one up. Sorry.
When I go back to early, like, I loved baseball growing up. Now it's much more basketball. I loved baseball growing up, and I loved watching baseball. And one of my—I don't know why—I don't know if it's a hero. I don't know, but I just thought it was so freaking cool. There was a pitcher named James Abbott, and James Abbott—you probably don't know about James Abbott—and that's totally fine. Nobody, let me know in the comments if you know who James Abbott is before I tell you. But James Abbott only had one hand, and he was a pitcher in the Major League Baseball Association. So what he did is he had his glove like just sort of resting on his stump and he would wind up and he would pitch. I think he was left-handed. He would pitch while just sort of pinching the glove against his chest, pitch the ball, whoosh, then while the ball's in the air, he would take that same hand.
No way.
Put it into the glove.
Really quick, get the glove.
Really quick into the glove so then he could field it. And then if the ball ever came back to him, he would field it with the glove, pinch it again with his other hand, pull it out. And
beautiful.
And he had a major league career of doing this with one hand. And I thought, oh my God.
Beautiful. That's freaking
amazing. So that's James Abbott.
Michael W. Smith was my hero for a bit. Yeah, for sure.
That's a good one.
So here's the thing. I started to think about like beautiful people like Beverly Cleary who were in my life growing up. But here's what, sorry to go dark with this. I'm a four. What can you expect? But that's what's hitting me is that like there were beautiful women like that in my life. I never would have thought of them like a hero. Mm. I only would have thought of like dudes in church as my hero. I would have been like my pastor. Pastor Rick.
Yeah.
I don't think I had a Pastor Rick.
Thanks for sharing, everyone. We will get into some, like you said, how this fits into our guest speaker here in a bit. Oh, that transition is not full screen. Oh. This is a little tiny, little tiny thing over there. Hey, before we get to our guests, let's share a few things.
One thing, one very exciting thing.
I did something today. I launched into the world a brand new endeavor. Never would have thought of them as heroes. Yes,
that's affirming what I was saying about them.
I launched a thing into the world today, and I'm super excited. So here's a little video just to let you know. If you don't know, then now you can know. Coming at you in three, two, 1. We'll see you here in a minute.
After 28 years of a committed allegiance to the world of evangelical doctrine, in 2010, I said, see ya. But it's not me, it's you. Specifically, your anti-LGBTQ theology rooted in tragic and toxic misunderstandings of the Bible. Then, about a year later, the church that I was pastoring at fired me when they learned of my new theological convictions. Specifically, because I no longer believed the Bible condemns those who identify as LGBTQ. And 2 years after that, I went ahead and compiled all of my research into the Clobber passages, and I presented them for the first time in a lecture series that I called Unclobber. And these videos have since been viewed on YouTube over 30,000 times. Then in 2016, I combined my story of how studying the Bible led me to become an open and affirming Christian, which led to my pastoral termination, with my research from the Clobber passages, and I published my first book, Unclobber, Rethinking Our Misuse of the Bible on Homosexuality. Since its release, it's sold over 20,000 copies, it's been translated into Spanish, and it continues to usher people into wholeness through theological liberation. But not everyone has the patience to watch a full YouTube lecture, or maybe the interest in reading an entire book. So then, in 2018, I created my Unclobber one-page cheat sheets, attempting to distill the best of my research into easy-to-read and understand PDFs. These little guys have now been downloaded like 5,000 times in the past couple years. And now, I'm ready to take Unclobber to the next level. Introducing Unclobber Online Courses. These in-depth courses are designed to show you, once and for all, that any attempt to use the Bible as justification for anti-LGBTQ beliefs is, in a word, wrong. And I'm tired of it, I know you're tired of it, it really is time we do better. So I've created 4 mini courses, one for Genesis 19 and the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, one for both those passages in Leviticus where we've been told that to be gay is an abomination, of course one for Romans chapter 1, perhaps the most misunderstood of all the Clobber passages, and then finally a course that combines 1 Corinthians 6 and 1 Timothy to show just how incorrect the church has been to call homosexuality a sin. Each mini course features over an hour of instruction, spread out over 7 video sessions filmed in high definition with interactive graphics. Plus, I've created an all-new Unclobber workbook to guide you through each course. And finally, each course includes the audio files of the teaching, you know, in case you're more of a listen while you do the dishes sort of person. Doing this work has truly been one of the highlights of my life this past decade. I'm blown away, like every week, hearing from people whose lives have been forever transformed because of Unclobber. And I can't wait to see how these new courses will continue to reveal what I believe to be fundamentally true, which is that all people are beloved children of God just as they are. So head on over to unclobber.com today and check out the all new Unclobber online courses. And let's keep moving toward a world in which the Bible is no longer misused for the discrimination and the judgment of our lesbian, our gay, our bisexual, our transgender, our queer siblings. Amen.
I'll drink to that. We didn't cheers. Have champagne tonight, plus I didn't want to spill it all over Koi. So cheers. We're cheersing with bourbon.
Cheers.
But congratulations.
Thank you.
Proud of you. So proud of you. I was saying today that I absolutely hate that we need this work.
Yep.
I hate it.
Yep.
You and I have always said that we hope that Unclobber becomes obsolete.
Make this
bye-bye.
Obsolete.
Don't need you anymore. That would be great, yeah. Right? If you just stopped selling books, but only because it wasn't needed anymore, that would yeah. be... That's the goal. That's the whole goal in Unclobber.
Yeah.
It's to make it so that it's not needed anymore.
I said in my live show today, and like over the 5 years that it's been out, each year has sold more than the year before, which is amazing. Fantastic.
Yeah.
More and more people are discovering this sort of liberative message and freedom. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I hope there's a point at which that begins to turn
yeah,
back
we
down.
Wanted to go like and then
like, mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you like? Remember that adorable little thing? Like, oh man, we don't need that
no,
anymore.
We needed that.
But we're not there yet. Yeah, and so in the meantime.
Maybe we live to see that day.
Maybe we live to see that day.
Yep.
So I'm super, yeah. So I'm super stoked. I think a lot of you who are watching this tonight, might already know that this launch happened today, but maybe the Pod Fam, because this show reaches way more people through the podcast. So if you're listening, PodFam, yeah, just know that today was the day that after many months and many hours and many times of Kate being like, are you launching that thing yet? I'm like, it's not ready. It's not ready. I'm not ready. It's not ready. It was like one part anxiety of me, like, I don't want to put it into the world. And one part, it's just, there's a lot. It's a lot of work to do to get this thing ready. I totally underestimated how much it would take.
Which is saying something. If Colby underestimates how much work something's going to take.
But today has been so lovely. So lovely watching people buy the course, watching people. That was a high five.
Oh, no, we can high five. That'd be a weird time to high five.
That would be a weird
time. No, I was going to say you should share the coolest part about the work.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So people bought the course. But then one of the things, I'm going to get this graphic off the screen. One of the things that we knew from the get-go was that this material, oftentimes the people who need it the most are in situations where they don't have the resources for it. And so mostly we're talking about like young kids who identify in some ways LGBTQ or just people who are down on their luck and for any number of reasons, and they need this sort of message. And they might barely have $15 to buy the book, but not everybody is a book reading person. There's no way they're going to have the money to buy an online course. So we knew from the get-go, like, yes, we're going to sell this course and we're going to make it totally free for anybody who needs it or wants it and just doesn't have the resources for it. No questions asked. Like, literally, it's just, here's a link, click it, you have access to it. So that is 100%, like, right now, it's called the Unclobber Scholarship Program. Anyone and everyone who needs it can just go get it. But then also, in addition to that, we created Unclobber Scholarship Sponsors, which are people who
my favorite thing.
Which who themselves, they've like already been unclobbered, right? They don't necessarily need the content or the course, but they have that same vision that we do. Like, let's make this stuff obsolete. Let's render this stuff irrelevant. And so scholarship sponsors can give donations. There's three different levels to say, yes, I want to sponsor people's scholarship. I want to make sure that if people need this, then they can get it for free. And like within minutes of launching the course,
literally
this morning,
minutes,
sent the email out.
5 minutes.
Email came back that somebody had already signed up to become a legacy sponsor, which is the highest tiered sponsor. Someone said, yeah, I believe in this so much. Here, I want to be a legacy sponsor and sponsor multiple people for this program. It's just so, people are lovely. People are amazing and it's beautiful. So anyway, all of that, if you're curious, you can go to unclobber.com, which kind of serves as the hub for all things Unclobber.
I just think the fact that there's people out there who want other people to be free and want to pay for that just gets me.
Yeah.
Good job.
Thanks, babe.
Good work.
Thank you.
One more cheersy.
Cheers to that. And we're enjoying.
Thanks for celebrating with us.
Yeah. This is Jameson, but this is the Black Barrel.
Really, I'm most excited for churches to have this resource because we're in this beautiful time to be alive where the church is doing this wild shifting. Mm-hmm. And I think that churches all over America are trying to become open and affirming from a place of not, which takes a lot of work to bring your people with you in the church world. And I'm really excited for them to have these courses.
Right, Shane? Heart singing for sure. Within just hours of launching the course, I've already heard from two people within those contexts that are like, this would be great for a group, for a church. So that's my task next week is to figure out how to make a group model for this so that not everybody that wants to take it individually, like they can just buy the bulk. But anyway, you'll know more about that because that's coming down the pike. I've been here before. And I asked, is it pike or pipe? And it's pike.
Oh, coming down is that the pike. A thing?
Yeah. Okay. Hey, before we get to our guests, can we talk about the garage sessions?
Sure.
For just a second? Okay. So the garage
sessions. Garage sessions are fun.
The garage sessions, if you subscribe to our podcast, what up, PodFam? If you subscribe to our podcast via iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or Stitcher, then this last week you might have heard well, what's this? This is interesting. This doesn't seem like the normal Kate and Colby show from like the live show recording. And you're right, it wasn't. It's a new thing that we're calling the Garage Sessions, which is a return to our roots.
It's really just, it's more normal. It's back to what we used
to. Circa seasons 1 through 4. Mm-hmm. And so this will drop periodically.
Thanks, Floyd.
Oh, Floyd's here. Oh my gosh. Good to see you, buddy. So I've got a little clip from the episode that we released this week from the Garage Sessions.
Of course you do.
So there's just little clips. Let's just listen to this clip here real quick. Because it makes me laugh.
Photograph. Photo.
You guys, my that word husband weird? Anyway. And lights. I texted my best friend the other day and I said, if my husband buys one more light, you're going to need to come pick me up. She said, deal.
Where would you go? I'm just trying to weigh
the woods.
The risk here. Where would you go and when would you return? Because I have some lights that I've bought, but I haven't set up yet. They're still in a box.
For what?
I'm afraid to answer that question now.
Dear Jesus in heaven on the right-hand hand side of God.
Sweet baby Jesus.
Why?
No, I do really, I don't.
Okay, is it over?
It's almost over.
I love lights. I'm trying to think this through. Like
The other day. Okay, so I...
Even back and... Go ahead. I'm going to save this thought.
No, yeah, you share. Mm-hmm. I've had this dream of having a plant wall.
We've gotten into fights over lights, by the way.
That's for damn sure. Oh, of course we have. Yeah. Yes. You don't understand the light situation, people. Anyway, I've had this
telling the whole plant wall. Story.
You know, a wall that just has plants hanging on it instead of pictures.
I don't remember how long this clip is.
I've been obsessed with
this. Do you want me to stop it? Okay, Kate wants to stop it.
And then it's mocking me.
Oh my God.
Keep going.
I promise the podcast is about more than just fighting over lights, but it is really funny.
We eventually get into how progressive tolerance demands a kind of intolerance. That's the subject matter. But we do start by talking about lights.
Just appreciate it.
To your Jesus in heaven at the right hand of God. This is life.
But Karen can vouch me. That text really did happen to her. If Colby opens up one more box of lights, I swear to God.
I have not opened the box that was mentioned in that episode.
It has remained the plant wall story, I'll share it quicker here, is just that I finally did a pretty plant wall and then Colby added lights to it. And I was like, why?
It looks so good now. It looked amazing. I'm not going to get over into it again. So the Garage Sessions, so that episode dropped this week, and really we do get into a really beautiful conversation around how within progressive spaces, it's within progressive spaces, we are heavy on the value of tolerance, and in order for that to really manifest, there has to be a kind of intolerance against anything that might prevent belonging. Yeah. And so your work with becoming a death doula, you talk about how that and birth doulas, about protecting and nurturing the space so that life can flourish. Anyway, it's a really cool conversation, and we were honored to release it this week. And we've got some really cool conversations coming up.
I can't wait for our next sessions. One.
I know, it's going to be good. So make sure, if you're mostly just a live show watcher, which is awesome, make sure you do check out the podcast.
Yep. Because that's the only place to find those.
That's right.
All right. Our sweet guest is all the way in North Carolina.
That's right.
And it is like 10:30, 10:45.
It is. But we always do this right before the guest. If you would like to, speaking of supporting things that you believe in, if you would like to support the Kate and Colby Show, we invite you to do that at Good job pointing.
I know. It's easy when they're straight down from me and just can go.
Just go to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. That's KateandColby. And this is a way for you, if you want to just do like a one-off, like, hey, thanks for the show tonight. Or if you watch this back later on YouTube or Facebook and you just want to say, that was a great episode, you can buy us a coffee for $5 or a couple coffees for $20 or whatever. Or you can do like Amanda did this week and you can become a monthly supporter. We call them baristas. So thank you, Amanda, for believing in the Kate and Colby Show and supporting us and saying, yeah, I want to buy you coffees every month. And that's a beautiful thing. And so we thank all of our baristas from the bottom of our plural hearts. Yeah?
Yes.
All right. Now we get to our guest.
Yes.
Bring it.
Thank you.
Denise Akers in the house, everybody. Thunderous applause.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, friends.
Hello, hello.
It's really
I love watching
you.
Your show. This is so great. You have such wonderful transitions. It's all just so well put together. I would expect nothing less from you too, though.
Wonderful transitions.
Especially, especially year three.
It's all Colby. It's all Colby. I show up and sit in a chair.
You
facts.
Well, I'll cheers your new courses with my tea.
Oh, yay!
Actually,
thanks,
Jimmy. This is my Pride Month mug. That Floyd will recognize because it's from our documentary.
Oh, nice.
I don't even know if you can read it.
Jane?
If you go this
way. Jane?
Nope.
Go the other way.
The other way. She's like me. She can't. There we go. Jane
knows Connie. She doesn't care to know. No.
Oh, spin. You got to turn it.
Spin. No,
nope,
spin the other way.
Wrong way.
She doesn't care to.
This is really amazing.
She doesn't care to know. It's killing me. What does Jane not care to know?
I feel so validated. I'm the same. Oh,
she doesn't care to know dick. Worth the wait.
That punchline was way worth the wait, but that is hilarious. I'm the same way. I can't.
She doesn't care to know dick.
In the documentary that I produced years ago, it was a slow roll through the audience as they would see this on the table at a particular meeting. It was just so fun to sit in an audience and like hear the ripple start as people like managed to read it and like caught on anyway.
That's perfect.
Yes. That's really perfect.
Hello, Floyd. It's good to see you here.
Can we start there? And can you tell us, okay, what are you referencing? What is this documentary that you're referencing? That's a great place to start because that kind of, I think, launched you. I'm going to say launched you into the space you are now, but that may not be totally true, but that's how I remember the story.
That's certainly a key element of it. So, goodness gracious, it's been at least 12 years ago now because I was pregnant with my eldest and she's now 12. When we started the initial questioning of our church's stance on LGBTQ things, which I have recommended on Clobber now to many people. And
nice.
For us, that was part of our deconstruction and faith shift. But the project that we did along that, and I say we, I'm speaking of my spouse because he's a filmmaker, and we ended up doing a documentary called Seventh Gay Adventists.
Such which a is great title. Either,
it's so good, right?
Yeah.
Do you just love that?
Yeah.
Oh, best.
It was really actually a working title just to help
or was
people
it really?
In the industry know what we were working on.
Oh,
it's great because you don't need the paragraph to explain what it's about.
Exactly.
And then when the Seventh-day Adventist Church threatened to sue us over the title, I was like, oh, yeah, that's the title.
Oh, my God. That's my favorite. I don't think I've ever heard you. As many
that.
Times
awesome.
As we've talked about your documentary, I don't think I've ever heard you tell that part before.
That's badass.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And honestly, I think if somebody had called with like a, hey, like,
that's it.
Could you consider changing? I might have, but they didn't. We just got
they
a cease and desist.
They came straight with the, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like we were served with papers at our apartment kind of thing.
And, what about Matthew 19, where they come before you and then the elders, they just went straight to the courts.
Yeah. So, and this is a denomination that my spouse and I both go back 5 generations in. Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's like, we knew people, they could have talked to us. So at that point, I felt very protective on behalf of the LGBTQ Adventist community that had welcomed us as storytellers and brought us in. Peter, he's the one who sent me this mug.
Nice.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Speaking of the mug, before we, Joel Smith does want to clarify that for some people, dick is worth the wait.
Okay. Agreed.
Fair point.
It was a lesbian couple who this mug featured in. Yeah. In the story. So yes. So I really felt, I had a queer Adventist tell me, please don't change the name of the film. Because it just like that title is my life and it's trying to, you know, wrestle with belonging in a place that doesn't want me with this core part of who I am. And, you know, that title really does capture. And so I was like, fine, we're going to bat for this. Like, cool. We'll go to court if we have to. And,
wow.
But yes, so having a legal action with your denomination is a really good kick in the pants to examine your relationship with it. And that definitely became a big part of our deconstruction, faith shifting. And I definitely still love many, many, many people in that space. And I know people who find it deeply meaningful, but it was part of my work to journey elsewhere. And then I was a parent with young kids, and I started reading some of the books to them that I had grown up with and realized I couldn't. It didn't, you know, these stories didn't align with who I wanted them to be in the world or who I thought people of faith should be in the world. This was also right around the 2016 election.
Okay.
And I mean, this was a many years process. The whole faith shifting thing, as you know, it's a fits and starts and here and there and circling it back. And is there a corner of the camp? Can I pitch my tent like over here?
They'll find you.
But the Holy Troublemakers book came about after the, like, really December after the 2016 election is when the idea kind of came full force. It was my attempt to have some sort of faith stories that I wanted to share with my kids, because the origin stories of faith that I had grown up with were no longer ones that I could, for the most part, pass on.
Can you say a little bit more about that? So when you talk about the stories that you grew up with, or maybe even the actual books you grew up with, like, what was it about them specifically that you felt in good conscience? I imagine in good conscience, like, or just maybe as you cast the vision for your life and for your family's life, you're like, this is just not in alignment with what I see. Like, what was it specifically for you?
Well, there was a host of things. It started by noticing that there were zero LGBTQ people. It's a completely heteronormative world. Often very, like, faith was wrapped in the flag. It was a very whitewashed patriotic vision. A lot of missionary stories that you can't sort of tell with the same sort of way that they were told, you know, back in 1995, to go back to your intro.
Wait, how many years ago did you say that was? I'm tender about
I wasn't really doing the math there, but probably longer than that. And I really, I also really started having trouble with substitutionary atonement and everything being your evil inside. You know, you have this corrupt heart that you can't trust. And so if you're trying to look for, you know, affirming, not whitewashed, you know, white nationalism, some feminine divine would have been great in there. That's why I started to matter about that a lot. But then plus not wanting substitutionary atonement to be the only view of the reason Jesus walked this earth, to be there, like, there's not a lot of options out there. Yep. And I remember reading a bedtime story book. This will really date me for people who might know my denomination of heritage. It was called Uncle Arthur's Bedtime Stories. And
it's kind of creepy, they were just sounding.
Yeah. They are two really, really moralistic. It's one of those things, you know, like, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, and they went out where they weren't supposed to do, and, like, the kid broke his foot kind of thing. Like, it's a very, like, super moralistic.
If you sin, you'll break your foot.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. And so I was reading them. Somebody just gifted us a set, and my daughter was very young at the time, but 5, 6 maybe, and she just said, mommy, these are kind of weird. Like, I don't like the way they talk about God. And I was like, yeah, I kind That's of agree amazing. With you. You're right.
Demi's conversations with her so far, mostly her oldest daughter, the stories we hear, but with both her kids, though, the way that they converse about everything, especially spirituality, and then the way that Deneen shares those stories are some of my favorite spiritual lessons, like, ever, because Deneen has, like, mastered the art of allowing Lily to be, like, the lead voice in their conversations, and then, like, she follows her where she wants to go. It's the most beautiful thing. So to where she has a 5-year-old who says, these stories are weird, mommy, you know? Yeah. Oh, it's the best thing
ever. Well, so the sweetest thing is that I did start praying to Mother God when Lily was young, not 100% consistently. And actually being a part of Sojourn, we used to live in San Diego and these two lovely people were our pastors. Like, it was just amazing. Every time she heard God referenced in feminine form and she was paying attention to every single one, she would look at me and she'd be like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? And so she has taught her younger sister, and there's almost a 7-year age gap, so there's a fair difference there, to pray to Mother God. And then my 5-year-old Lucy has turned that into Mama God.
Mom.
Love it. And she has no idea that that is unusual. I'm afraid for her to start reading and recognizing how unusual that is. But she heard somebody on the radio, and it wasn't like a Christian radio station. Just somebody said something, and you know, there's all sorts of references in our culture to God, He, yep. And she thought they made a mistake.
No way. Oh, bless.
She's like, "Oops, silly them."
I know.
Oh my God, I love it.
Like, it is automatic for her, which I love. And I'm also just like so sad at one day that she's going to realize like, oh, not everybody prays to Mama God.
The people are loving the Mama God. Anna says, Mama God, I love that. Susan says, how precious, Mama God.
That's going to be the next book, is a prayer book based on her actual prayers to dear Mama God.
Yes. When's the Kickstarter start? We're ready.
I'm working with the artist right now.
Oh, cool.
Coming up with those concepts is a little bit challenging in the sense that there is almost no reference point for it. Like, can you think of a children's, like, I can think of like one or two, like some Rabbi Sasso and a few other books where there's, you know, hints of God not having masculine gender in children's prayer books. Like, it's really hard to come up with. So.
Yeah,
but I'm working with the same artist who did the cover art for Holy Troublemakers. And she also did the Mary Oliver portrait and the Rachel Held Evans portrait. So I'm very
love
in good hands.
Right. Okay, can we talk about Holy Troublemakers and unconventional things?
Yes. Get us into it.
It is my favorite thing. Tell us, first of all, so obviously you've told us, you know, your story behind it and what inspired it and just wanting kids to have these. But why choose to do it? So what Holy Troublemakers and Unconventional Saints is it's a collection of biographies, portraits, would you call them, of different people, of real people.
It's like an anthology style. I was actually really inspired by Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls and the incredibly high quality art, because I wanted it to have that feel of like a coffee table art book in addition to having these profiles. So it's an anthology of profiles and original portraits of 36 people of diverse faiths who, you know, worked for more love and justice in their corner of the world.
I love it.
Even why when that often rocked the religious
world. Yeah. Why that bent? Why was that the focus to give kids stories of people in the world rather than like, you know, you're going to write a children's book and you want to have more progressive children's content. You could write, you know, different stories. You could write prayer books and you could redo Bible stories. You could do all kinds of things. But why did you want to give children stories of actual people? We asked earlier, we asked everyone like to talk about a hero and you heard my little ranting about that. So what got you thinking about, this is what I want kids to have. I want them to hear about actual humans.
Yeah, well, you did a very good job demonstrating how when you're trying to think of a faith-based hero, if you grew up with the sort of backgrounds that we grew up with, it's not great picking. So I think I really, and again, this came out of the 2016 election, which was something I needed to focus on, something that could help save my own soul at the time. And I don't think I realized that, but that's really what this project became. And these are people whose faith, and we're not talking just Christians, you know, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, and Buddhists. These are people who have been through really difficult times and seen great injustice and have kept that course and like focused on what matters and the good that can be done. And I want to believe that faith can work for the common good of us all, for a place where we can all flourish. And the dominant form of, especially in this country, you know, Christianity is white evangelicalism at the moment. At least it's the political power. And that's just not anything that I recognize as a faith that is doing any of us any good. And I wanted to show people who have been through, you know, most of them far worse situations than what we are facing right now, and can really show us the way. And I just think story is a great access point to talk about shared values. And I loved, you talked a couple of weeks with Cindy Wong Brandt, who is one of the people in the book.
I'll show
you
a gorgeous
portrait. Her profile art is one of my favorite pieces in the whole book. Yeah. And it's probably is my number one favorite. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. We've already proved that I've got a directional problem here.
Yeah, there we go. It's gorgeous.
Meta right
now. I loved her talking about this idea of inviting our children to share in our rituals and our values. It is a part of belonging, but it's not with this, you must believe this or else.
Yeah.
That many of us had. And so, you know, these stories, they all come with little prompts at the end for a discussion starter if people choose to do it. And
love it.
It's just meant to invite that curiosity and that wonder. And I love when I get to hear back from, and this book came out right before COVID, so I've met very few readers. I only get to hear email here and there.
Yeah.
And I love hearing sometimes about the conversations. Somebody the other day was like, you know, they have like three different faiths in their family and a non-binary teen and all different ages. And they were like, thank you for like, we have never had, like we're using it as a family devotional and we've never had something that worked.
Yeah,
like
that all of them can enjoy, get something, see themselves in.
Yeah.
Karen said we used it as our Monday history textbook for homeschool this year, which has been absolutely perfect. Isn't that so cool?
Except Fable tries to get away with learning about Kate every week. Because if people don't know, viewers and later pod fam, Kate was one of the profiles, which leads me to one of the questions I have for you, Danine, is how in the world did you come up with your list of how many people are featured in the book? How many profiles do you have?
So it's 36.
Okay.
It was going to be 50, but it turns out that I write a little longer than that would have worked out for. The book would have been too heavy for children to hold. So there are a few that are done, ready for a second volume at some point in time. Yeah. it was a combination. I was trying to find Kate's... You're making me try to do two things at once here.
You're good. That's us all the time here. So you're in.
And I'm not that good at it. I love this part. You know, I just was sharing.
So
I was sharing one of your lines, Kate, about Jesus was a man who mothered the world with a group, a circle of women this past weekend on a camping thing and like tears everywhere. And this was like not a religious group, but it was just like, what a concept if we had that. So The criteria for who to put in the book is my window was somebody for whom faith mattered. There's a lot of people doing amazing things in the world or who have, but it's not necessarily that their faith is a major motivator in their life. And it's not that it has to be. It's just we have a lot of other books, great anthologies about, you know.
Yeah. You had a bent. You had a focus.
Stories for Rebel Girls. Something. Yeah. So my focus was trying to bring better faith stories, better faith heroes. And
I love it.
So people for whom their faith mattered, who were working for more, you know, love, kindness, compassion, justice in their corner of the world. And I think Bayard Rustin was really the initial person who inspired it. And I'm going to guess your audience probably has a good... knows who Bayard is, and he is having a lot more attention. I've heard his name mentioned a lot recently, especially this year.
And the artwork.
I don't know a prettier book. Like, there's no prettier. 100%. It's so beautiful.
Because you hired, which I love. I loved your commitment, like in your Kickstarter campaign. In your Kickstarter campaign, you were very clear, like, I want to pay artists. I'm not asking people
pay
to like
jump
onto this project as a passion, you know, labor of love sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was like, no, I want to actually. And so the book
different
is stunning.
Artists
yeah. So
for different profiles. It's amazing. Yeah. So many. How many artists in total?
About 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really wanted that diversity of styles. Yeah, and cool. I also wanted, so one of the major emphases was to include stories that are often excluded from religious narratives, especially stories of women, LGBTQ people, Indigenous people, people of color, all the people who have been written out of religious narratives for so long. And I wanted the artists to reflect those backgrounds as much as possible too. So it was really, really fun to work with a lot of different artists, a complete project management nightmare. I know why most publishers
can't.
I bet. That's so much.
Most publishers will not do that for good reason, because I ended up not being able to write research and be art director at the same time. They're okay. Very, very different brain, yep. You know, sides of my brain. So I really had to focus on getting the art done first. And, but it was a beautiful and wonderful experience. I learned a ton. I do not have fine art skills myself, so I'm just in awe of artists, because they can help us imagine the world that can be. Yeah. And it's an incredible gift that I think we need more of.
It was perfect.
Yeah, the aesthetic, having an aesthetically pleasing book mattered a lot to me.
And you can tell, because it is gorgeous in every way. It is, you just want to touch it, hold it. Yeah. It's just beautiful.
And for people who are watching really quick on Facebook or YouTube, whether now or later, the link for the book is in the description.
Oh, so perfect.
You can easily grab that.
That's great.
And I wanted to mention that also, so a beautiful book like this is not an inexpensive book, but we are a nonprofit and we give away copies to anybody who asks, no questions asked also. So there's like a contact link on holytroublemakers.com, and you just write and say, hey, I love this resource. Can't afford it. Give it to me. And that's for churches a lot of churches have been buying it for their families, and there's a curriculum that goes with it now too. So same thing goes for the curriculum for churches or people who would love the companion curriculum. And we don't ask any questions about it. It's just, if you need it, you want it. And
love that.
If anybody on your show just wants the digital version, I'll give you the code. Woo. I'm happy to share it. It's, you just use the code digital100. At holytroublemakers.com when you check out, and that's a free PDF.
Colton's going to make a little
digital
thing overlay.
Not digital. Digital 100.
Digital 100.
At checkout.
And I will say, it's not a book that is, in my opinion, meant to be digital.
Yeah. But,
totally.
I agree. I mean, I just said, you want to touch it.
It gives you a teaser. Like, you look at it, you see it, like, oh, actually, yes, I want this on my counter.
Well, and actually pastors and like children's pastors, people who are using this really like that to get a version that they can like put up in the room or something. Like it's an easy way to get up.
That makes sense.
Had a question, or you were going to go somewhere and then
I was just going to say, cause you were talking about not being an artist or not being a fine artist, I think is how you said it, and being amazed by the art. But what you blow me away at, like, I couldn't do what Deneen does. So because I'm in the book, I got to actually firsthand experience what Deneen does. So we just went and sat at coffee, and I think a lot of people, you had to do phone call, which would be even harder. But for me, because we happened to be living in San Diego together at the time, I got to just go sit with her at coffee. And I remember I was so nervous to show up because it was the interview for the book. And I was like, what's she going to ask me? And like, my life is so boring and there's no possible way that anyone could write a profile about me that would make me sound even remotely interesting. And I just, you remember, I spun out. Like, I totally spun out the whole way there. I was freaking out. And then afterwards, I called Colby and I was like, I don't know how she just did that, but I feel like a really cool human. And she hasn't even written the book yet. It's just from sitting at coffee with her talking. I was like, that's some kind of witchcraft. Some kind of witchcraft. Because now I feel really good about myself and I don't even know why. And then when you sent me, because you sent me what you wrote up first to, you know, have me check it for edits. And I remember I sent it to you again and I was freaking out. I'm like, I feel like I could die today and like my life is good. What? It was so meaningful. Mm-hmm. But the way that you took, like, if I was going to write a profile about my own life, I wouldn't have made it sound that good. Right. It's just so beautiful. And I don't mean like you made me sound good. I mean like your ability to take someone's very real. When I read it, I was like, I have nothing. I remember I said back to you, I have nothing to edit. I have nothing to change because you nailed it. There was nothing to edit. So it was my very real life. And yet this real experience of like
That's so real. That's so me. And yet, how did she do that? It's so beautiful. And it just, that's art.
I'm so glad you had that experience. I'm so glad you had that experience. I genuinely love people. Like, I find people fascinating.
You can tell.
And I love, and I think this is the documentary. This is the documentary side is, you're just looking for something that captures somebody's essence. You can't tell somebody's whole life story, of course, but you're looking for a core that connects some things. And it's different for different people, obviously. But, you know, and some of these just took me forever to work on.
I bet.
I had, like, Dr. Reverend Will Gaffney explaining concepts like womanism and midrash and you know, there's some concepts in, but I'll tell you the one that was the very hardest to like find down the essence for was sorry, now I'm trying to do two things at once again.
Talking
alphabetize is Gustavo Gutierrez. Liberation theology. What I realized is that 95% of people talk about liberation theology can't actually explain it in simple terms, concrete terms.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
And I don't think I would have written nearly as good of a book if I was writing to adults, because you can kind of slip into that. But when you're trying to imagine, okay, I'm writing for like, you know, third to seventh graders, you know, it can wiggle, especially older. I think you can definitely go into high school with this book. But I'm like, it's got to be concrete. And how do you do that? So I just went round and round with some of them. But it saved my soul. I really think it did. Like after the 2016 election, I was so spun for a loop, as I know so many were, or at least I think white Americans were. My friends who are not white were like, yeah, that was no surprise at all. But it was something that, like, seeing the world through the lens of these people and their life it connects me back to some joy. And that sense that, like, yeah, humans can suck and humans can also be incredibly beautiful and amazing. And, like, I'm trying to steer my ship that direction as much as possible.
I love it. One of my favorite things about the book is just that you have the terms all, you know, they're bold, and then you can look them up and go to the definitions, and it's all so clear just having that glossary and those definitions.
I'm kind of a nerd. I love the glossary, and it was actually the hardest thing to write of the entire book. I saved it to the end, which was a total mistake. It was a lot of like.
When I every time I look at it, I think to myself, this would be so much work, like so much work. But I mean, you don't do one thing in the book that you don't explain, and not in a like, I have to explain myself, in a like, you're taking someone's hand and you're walking them through it all, from everything from like why you capitalize black to, you know, what does gender even mean? And like, you walk us through all of it, and it's so helpful. It's helpful for me as an adult. And I know that Melissa just said that I bought it for a 44-year-old. Like, I learn what things are by reading this book. It's really good.
Yeah. Well, and I did too. Like, this was a fantastic learning experience. And I should say, I worked with some wonderful editors and people who gave input and gave reads on things, like in areas that I do not have personal identity or expertise. I definitely had a lot of really good help for that. And
tell me a bit about curious how the Kickstarter campaign came to be. Like, did you know from the get-go like that was going to be how you wanted to fund it, or did you try and pitch it to some publishing houses and that wasn't working out? Like, what was that process like?
No, this was always, so we came from I came from the background of working with my spouse doing independent documentary film. And so when you've had the autonomy of being an independent creative, it's really hard not to be. And I knew that as, I just knew this book was far too expensive for a publisher to take on at the quality level that I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Both the art and even the printing itself, it's printed with a worker-owned co-op in Canada, on like, you know, in processes and papers that are I feel ethically okay about, and things that I did not want to give up artistic control over. Yeah. So no, it was not one that I considered traditional publishing for. And at this point, I don't know. I have been approached, and I don't know if I would. Again, once you've had creative autonomy,
remember that battle with the cover, art?
I tell people all the time, I'm like, now that I've been on the inside of the publishing world and seen what people have to go through with their art and the way you have to like sell your freaking soul, it's horrible.
Colby, you may not feel love this, but so Lily likes all of our hardcover books to not have covers because she likes our bookshelf to look old fashioned. So this is how your book looks. She's stripped. There's a box in the garage, like.
You know what? That's actually perfect. Yeah, that's actually the perfect like end to that. That's like full circle. It really is. It was a nightmare of a situation, so that's actually perfect.
Everybody, just take the covers off.
That's just perfect.
That's really funny. I love that.
I thought it was a nice cover.
It did turn out.
It finally, we finally got there.
It was not our hopes and dreams for the shift. But it got there. Yeah, it was fine.
Okay, so you knew, like, no, we're going to have creative control. And you already had the background of running at least one, if not multiple, successful campaigns, right? Crowdfunding campaigns. So you knew that this was a realistic and valuable way to go. So then how did the actual campaign go for you? How did that go for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the fourth, crowdfunding over the last, 10, 12 years. And, they're huge, huge work. I mean, like stress, it's all you do for a while and you have to be really, really engaged. But I had everywhere I went, I remember talking to Brian McLaren at a conference. I think my eldest was 3 or 4. And I was like, Brian, thank you so much for your books. At that point, podcasts were just becoming a thing. But where are the books for kids? And I remember him saying like, oh, I think they'll be coming. And there really are some good picture books. And there's getting to be a few more, but, especially if you're talking middle grades, the bookshelf is like
slim pickings. It's slim pickings.
Yeah, it's super slim pickings. So I had talked to enough people, enough parents to realize like I cannot be the only person in this situation. And I felt all the feedback was very strong that this was a needed and wanted kind of resource. So
you knew you could go for it, like get people to back it.
Well, I wasn't 100% sure. Like, yeah. I can nerd out on the like back end of how to plan a Kickstarter, how you can set a goal, and that has to do with like your reach and percentage and conversion rates and all that kind of thing. And so it was a little bit out of range from what I thought for sure could happen. But the art, I had invested already in some of the art, and I knew it caught me, it compelled me. And I thought that people will invest for their kids, even if they won't for themselves sometimes. So
true. Totally
true.
So what was your goal? Do you remember what was the number? It was
50,000. And we went beyond that by a bit, about 57, I think. But of course, Kickstarter takes their piece. So, and then the book definitely did end up costing more than that. I'm not even going to say how much more.
Wow. I wondered as I watched the whole process unfold. I wondered. I'm like, is this? Yeah, because I just even as I mentioned earlier in the show, the courses that I launched today, like you have it. I thought I had a realistic sense of what it would require to make this thing into the world.
You never do, right?
Until you do it. Good gravy.
But here's the fun thing. And if anybody listens to this later, who's a creative independent, way to go for it. The book was in the black within 3 weeks.
That's rad.
And that's huge thanks to Glennon Doyle posting about it, because we sold out like instantaneously. I wish I'd invested in a lot more in the first print run.
Right? I know. Oh my God. That's so true.
And now she's probably too famous. That wouldn't have happened.
You're we could have sold out with even more books.
That's true. You kind of caught her in that sweet spot, right?
And it's it's really not like a, you know, I just want to make enough to keep doing it. Cause there's totally. So many books we need. Yep. There's so many books like this that we need out there. And I've got like five more kind of cooking here and there. I want to do picture books, so picture books are more like K2, K3 ish age range, of some of the major people in the book, like Bayard Rustin. So I have one starting with him. It's called Bayard Rhymes with Inspired, since nobody knows how to pronounce his name.
Oh my gosh, that's so that's cute. That's really cute.
And then the Dear Mama God prayer book. And then yep. I want to do one that's for middle graders too. That's a Mother God one. But that's going to be more in depth and be another like art anthology type book. And there's a volume two that's still to
I know.
Be done.
Okay. So well. What comes next? What's coming out next?
It's sort of, you know, when you're working with artists, I've realized you can't push things. You just have to wait to see what unfolds. So
you don't know.
I don't know for sure. Okay. I would guess Dear Mama God is up
next. I was
next.
Hoping. And I really want that one.
Yeah. There's honestly nothing revolutionary about it. It's just one of those expansive, beautiful prayer books based on literal prayers that I've heard my five-year-old pray.
That is
revolutionary about
fucking
it.
Fucking revolutionary, my friend.
Can we call BS on our guests? Can we do that to our guests?
What I mean is there's a lot of prayer books out there, but how many are addressed to Mama God?
So. Exactly. Yes. It's Which so is- revolutionary. I'm
excited to introduce, because what I have realized through the book and reading it with my own children or hearing other people that like, it's just helpful to have an entry point to some of these things or a way to frame it. And yep. So if you want to start using, you know, inclusive divine feminine, thanks, Melissa. language, like it's really hard to step in at first. And so like having a book, like kids are gonna be like, oh look, it's in a book,
so it's real. Yes, exactly. That exactly. Yeah. I love it. I
and still it have helps you too.
Yes, 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 yes. I still have Lily's Mother God art magnet on my magnet board in my kitchen. Sure, so I walk by it every day when I'm cooking dinner. It's just sitting right in front of me.
You know,
that was her first like
That was her first,
her first iteration. Yeah.
The latest.
She was so little when she did that one.
That she was 8 at first, and this one was last year. Let's see if I can get it. There we go.
Yay!
Yay! Oh, that's so great.
This is Mother so God cool. riding a phoenix.
So cool.
I need that one.
Okay, I'll drop. I put this one on card, so I'll send you a card.
Oh, that's
Yay.
Cool. That's cool. That's awesome. I just want to give some.
Oh my word!
I'll do props to our brother Joel, who earlier clarified that
Dick is worth waiting for. And now he
would
says,
also like to put in his pitch for a picture book of David and Jonathan.
Don't we?
Don't we?
For sure.
Joel's bringing the heat tonight. I love it.
That's good.
I think that would be awesome. And I just have got to do a book where Eve is a heroine.
Please, because it takes
courage to choose knowledge.
Yep.
If you want help with that world,
I will do anything to help.
We totally should.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Danine, what's something
in the world?
What's something you learned about yourself in the process of putting this book together?
Oh gosh, so much that I need more patience. that coffee is required. I think I learned, like probably any creative, that we do the projects that we need ourselves to.
Yeah.
Like the biggest fear I've always had being a parent is that I've brought an innocent life into a world that's completely screwed up and there's no bigger anything. And the people in this book have helped me tap into like hope for humanity, you know, hope that there's a story that you can step into that is about the common good of all. And of course you don't have to have a faith narrative for that, but you know, I know some personalities have an easier time with that through all the deconstruction. I was always one that thought there's some sort of magic in the world.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yes. That's what I love. I love your commitment to, you know, you were like, there's lots of things out there, anthologies of amazing people, but you were like,
I'm going to do one all on people who have faith and different faiths, but I love your commitment to that because I think it's so easy in progressive world and when you're deconstructing to just be like, F it all. And I love that you've helped us hold on to the magic in the world.
I did have those moments.
I bet. Oh, of course you did. And that's why your commitment is so beautiful, because you have the moments and you push through and you keep us in the magic. So I love it.
Well, part of me of keeping some sort of faith language, and I think it was from Brian McLaren that I first heard this, and he was quoting Maria Montessori, the idea that, you know, we don't grow up, it's not like you can grow up without a language and then just one day choose the language you want to speak. You are going to grow up with a language from a faith perspective too, even if it's a no faith perspective. You are giving your children something. Now I hope it's not a dogmatic, and I hope it's one that allows them to know there are other options out there. But because we both come from, and we, meaning my spouse and I, you know, five generations of a very conservative, Christian denomination, I wanted them to know that there are just other ways to be a person of faith in the world. Because in my view, that's almost like it's a vaccine in some ways against fundamentalism, in my view. By introducing all of this, it's so that one day when they're 17 and go to, like, you know, some weekend with the cousin somewhere, they don't come back born again and be like, oh my God, there's this thing I didn't know was in the world. Like, I want them
to know. My worst nightmare. It's my worst nightmare.
But I feel like this will let them know, I totally know people who, like, take Jesus seriously or read that text or this. Like, yeah, I've got a whole book about him. And
I
want them to know there's options and different paths that, you know, are open.
I love it. Oh, my friend, thank you so much for everything that you do in the
world. Your gift.
Thank you so much.
We love you, and
Sojo was the first place that I was able to, like, find spiritual home outside of five generations of a different thing. So
it's pretty freaking rad.
Thank you. I'm so glad we got to do life with you, and now we get to stay connected forever. Well, we know it's late, so we will jump to lightning round.
Ben really liked that vaccine against fundamentalism comment. Great. That was really good. Julie says the vaccine the world desperately needs. That's good.
I love it.
All right, Kate.
First I have to lightning hit the bolts. Knife. I can't find your button. There we go.
The last one came up.
Why?
I don't know. Oh, the buttons aren't connected. Oh, that's a Stacey Furness. That's an old scene. That's cool. So that button didn't work.
Now Deneen's a whole other person.
That button did not work. We're gonna go.
You changed your name.
We're gonna go to the scene that's supposed to be. Now the button should work.
So Colby does a lot of work for all these graphics and scenes, and so it gets a little chaotic. There's like 27 buttons at least in front of me. All right,
I'm loving the Hogwarts look on this.
Thank you. Thank you. And the colors.
I'm gonna change that button right now.
Okay,
keep going. You're good.
Favorite movie of all time. No pressure.
Oh, so much pressure though. But
I know.
I was going to go with, like, early formative movie because I was only allowed to watch like three movies when I was younger, and I got to go. And especially because Taryn mentioned Anne with an E, Anne of Green Gables was incredibly important to me for a long time.
Like the BBC productions?
Yes, well, the Canadian version of that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is that
the Megan Follows version?
The one we were all in love with. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, with Sweet Gilbert, who has since passed.
Oh, really?
I know.
I love him so much.
Sidebar: I only found out recently that he was gay. The actor.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, like, no wonder he was the perfect man.
You heard it right here, folks, on the Kate and Colby show.
He was a healer, and he was, anyway. I named my cat after him, and my cat was supposed to be a soft healer because of that. And my cat is the worst, so I don't know what happened. I guess my cat is embodying the Gilbert who teased Anne and pulled on her hair and called her carrots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Early Gilbert.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
he'll transform. He'll have his moment.
He's still a kid. He's only a year old.
Soft healer.
Gilbert.
Okay, fill in the blank. Self-care is?
Alone time. I have two young kids and I've been pandemicking, so alone time.
And I've been
so yourself has not been cared for as much lately is what you're saying.
Long walks in the woods, man. All right. Something you're deeply grateful for right now.
Poetry.
Ooh, what are you into right now? What's your fave?
Always Mary Oliver. I read her devotions and I've been writing out and trying to memorize poems like I used to do scripture when I was young. And it is such a good spiritual practice.
That's so good.
That's cool.
I need to do that. That's great. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Some Wendell Berry. And I just got this awesome new book of black poets writing nature poetry.
Nice.
Because we often don't connect black poets with nature poetry. And so
beautiful. Anyway,
in nature poetry, I live in the woods right now. So that's my thing.
I love it. What's your weirdest fear? What are you afraid of? So we can laugh at you about it.
I mean, big spiders. They're in all the movies. They're the thing. I think it's a primordial human fear. And they grow them big in these North Carolina.
I was going to ask you, how are they out there?
Yeah, no.
You staying safe?
Yeah. They're actually mostly harmless. The only like poisonous ones are the same ones you have in San Diego, but still right. They're like gigantic.
Yeah, they're not really that. You did that, but that can't be real, right?
I could be. I mean, you asked about a fear. I'm giving you the fear version.
She's giving us the weird part of the weirdest fear. That's how our fears work. They're not rational. All right, famous person you swear you'd be besties with if only you knew each other.
Oh, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Nice. Everything like that man answer. Does. I love it. I can totally see you two together. All right, book you think everyone should read.
Ooh. Okay, I'm a former English teacher. This is really hard. I am reading a beautiful new translation of the Tao Te Ching that I am loving right now.
Cool. Everyone should
It's read. Called Tao Te Ching, Power to the Peaceful.
Cool. Nice.
All right, last question. We ask everybody this every week on the Kate and Colby Show. What's sustaining your soul? What's keeping you going?
Morning coffee on the little back deck where the trees are super green right now and reading some poetry.
Can we go watch the Avett Brothers documentary again?
Oh, because God, yeah. Have you seen that?
I think of you in your woods.
Which one?
The Avett Brothers?
The documentary.
Their documentary on HBO?
I've pretty much seen everything that Disney Plus has on offer this last year because Avor mentioned 5-year-old. But
that's awesome.
I don't know
give
if
me
you,
the good suggestions.
I don't know if you know or like the Avett Brothers music, but the whole documentary is that
they're born and raised right in your space. Area. And so when they show their home and the gorgeous woods, I think of you and I'm like, oh, I want to go visit
and it's
Janine.
A gorgeous documentary.
Yeah, it's a beautiful documentary. Yep. I don't know what to push.
I don't know what. No, it's not push buttons. The buttons are unreliable buttons. At this point.
No pushing buttons. Thank good. You, friend. It's Janine, been so good to have you.
Thanks for staying up so late.
Thank you.
East Coast representing.
Yeah, yes. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Go to sleep.
You are sustaining my soul tonight. Thank you.
Love you, friend.
Be well.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
So that was Janine Akers, everyone.
Isn't she just a joy?
She's a joy.
A joy of a human.
She's a joy of a human, and her ability to show up in life and say yes to what like needs to be created in the world.
I don't have that.
Is
where does she get
stunning.
That? Can she bottle it?
Like you
can
know what
she
needs
sell
to be
it
made?
On Etsy?
This documentary about the Seventh-day about LGBTQ people. Like, let's make that.
Let's do it.
Okay.
And then she does it.
You know what needs to be made? Resources for kids to learn about people who
I could do that. I'll make it. Okay.
Let's
do it. I love it.
She's great. So sauce. I assume everybody who's watching has either already ordered Holy Troublemakers and Unconventional Saints.
Yep.
Or plans to do it later, but the links are in the description below. So
yep.
You definitely will.
Yeah,
want
you
to
want
do
that,
that
in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
All right. What do we got coming up? Well, first of all, a bit of a break. So, before you get lost in all the photos on the screen,
look at that, though. I'm getting lost. I'm sorry. It's so beautiful.
I know. It's very, very exciting.
I'm so excited.
So, listen up.
Look at those gorgeous humans. I love those.
Listen up, live show watchers. We need a name for our live show watchers. We have our pod fam. Anyway, that's a different
They're still a pod fam. It's still our podcast, and they're still here with us.
It doesn't work for me. I need a different name. So, we're gonna take a June break from the live show. Okay, so we're not gonna be on air for the next, I think, 4 Wednesday nights, which means a lot of garage session recordings are coming down the pike. Yep. So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean.
But that is where we will be for the next 4 weeks. We won't be here.
Yes, we won't be here.
And but when we come back,
we're coming in hot in July. We've got, and this is just a few of the guests that we got coming. So John Pavlovitz, whom I know you love, does a lot of work around grief and faith.
Yes, people think of John and think fiery and, you know, against evangelicalism and white nationalism. And that's true. He's incredible in that way.
Thanks,
but
I
love him because he's so soft and talks about grief and the loss of his father and how grief continues on long after loss. And I can't wait to talk to him.
And then we got Michael C. Waters, who we haven't met yet.
I know. I'm really excited.
He sent us a couple of speaking of children's books, a couple of children's books that he's written for young black boys specifically.
Yeah.
Can't wait to meet Michael C. Waters and talk with him. We got Stephanie Tate, who is
a friend made this year.
And is like oftentimes on the not Pod Fam. I know you want to call it Pod Fam, but the View crew. Hey. The View crew, it's a work in progress. Stephanie Tate's gonna join. Flamie Grant.
Yes.
Drag queen Flamie Grant herself is gonna show up. That one might actually be.
I think we're gonna do that one in person. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That'd be super fun. Austin Hartke, who is does a ton of work in the transgender community. He has written a book, Transform, which is
beautiful.
Gorgeous. Exploration of transgender sexuality.
My heart is gushy right now.
Susan Cottrell is on the screen there. You know Susan Cottrell? She's founded Freed Hearts. And
one of my mamas.
Yep, one of your mamas. She is a YouTube video, Why I Chose My Daughter Over the Evangelical Church, and it has like a million views. And these are just a handful of the guests coming up.
You guys, we're the luckiest humans in the world that we get to do this work. And we get to do it because of you. So thank you.
Thank you.
We love you. Thank you for showing up here so that we can talk to people like that. Which I just pointed the wrong way.
Okay. All right. So we'll see you in a month, okay? Please set a calendar.
Come back.
Set a reminder. July 6th. We'll remind you if you want to go to kateandcolby.com, sign up for our newsletter. We'll remind you, follow us on Instagram at Kate and Colby. Just we'll let you know when we're coming back, but we will miss you in the interim. Check out the garage sessions.
If you enjoy the Kate and Colby Show, here are a few ways that you can support us. Subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever platform you use, and when you do, go ahead and leave us a review or rating. This will help others discover our show. Find and follow us on social media using the handle @KateandColby. And speaking of social media, we'd love it if you share our show with your friends. Everyone is looking for a great podcast recommendation, so help them and us out. Finally, if you visit us at kateandcolby.com, you can subscribe to our newsletter, learn more about us, the hosts, and discover great resources for coming more alive. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded in San Diego and produced by Holy Living Studios. Thank you for your love and support. We do this show for you, our pod fam. Until next time, be well.